probability and polynomial dynamics.
Thank you very much. I have to give all of you a fair warning. My talk. So first of all, I don't work in number theory, and secondly, my talk will not have anything to do with computer experimentation in number theory. However, I hope that the theorem that I'm going to state is going to be interesting to number theorists. So, but first I have to tell you about the motivation of all of this, which is a very classical problem in dynamics. So here's a completely classical problem. It's called a linearization or the linearization problem for analytic maps. So suppose I have a germ of an analytic map. Let's call this f of z. Which fixes the origin. And denote its derivative at the origin by lambda. And let's say this is not equal to zero. Okay? So the question then is whether there exists a locally conformal change of coordinates in the neighborhood of the origin. So phi, I'll call it phi, phi of 0 is 0, such that this change of coordinates conjugates our map F to its linear part. Okay, if this number is not on the unit circle, then the answer is fairly elementary, and it's yes. So I'll specialize to the difficult case when this number is on the unit circle. So it's e to the 2 pi I theta, where theta is real. And if theta is rational, then the answer, under some reasonable assumptions on F is also known. So let me only look at the irrational numbers theta. Okay? So that's the question. So suppose I have this. Can the map be linearized? Now, obviously, to get any sort of a negative example, you would need to make some assumptions on F, because you can take a linear map F, which, you know, always can be linearized and doesn't give you anything interesting. So let me give you two classical theorems, one positive and one negative. So in I'll do this in a chronological order. So here is the theorem by Kremer. This is mid-1920s, I think 1927. And the theorem says the following. So suppose we further know that F is not just locally defined in the neighborhood of the origin, but is globally defined and is, in fact, a rational map, a rational function of the Riemann sphere. So F maps the Riemann sphere to itself, and this is rational of degree D. And D is at least 2. Okay? So with this additional assumption, there exists a dense, well, for a generic theta, the answer is no. Okay, where generic is understood in the tuple, in the bare category sense, there exists a dense G delta set for which the answer is no. Okay. So, on the other hand, there is a sufficient condition for any analytic germ to be linearizable, which was known since early 1940s. So here is another classical theorem, this one by Carl Siegel, and this is about 1942. And it says the following: suppose theta is Diophantine of order k. So that means that, well, for anybody who might not be a number theorist in the audience, that means that absolute value of theta minus irrational is at least a constant over the denominator to the power k. So theta is not well approximated by rationals. Then phi always exists. No assumptions on it. Okay, so this is a system.
K?
Huh?
What is K?
At least two. So this is a sufficient condition.
So why do you introduce K if its statement doesn't depend on K?
Hmm?
What is the role of K in this theorem?
No idea. What's wrong with K in this theorem? So for any K, so suppose theta is the function of some other K. Okay? Then phi exists. So then f can be linearized. There are no assumptions on f. There is just an assumption on theta. Theta is an irrational, and it's not Liouville. Okay? So now let me specialize further. Let me specialize further to the best studied case, to the case when f is not just rational, but is in fact a quadratic polynomial. Okay? So I'll write such a function f in a normalized form after a change of coordinates. You can assume that the quadratic term of our quadratic polynomial has coefficient 1. And so the polynomial has the form p theta of z is equal to z squared plus e to the 2 pi I theta times z. Okay. So it's a quadratic polynomial. 0 is fixed. The derivative at 0 is e to the 2 pi I theta. And theta is an irrational. So in this case, there is an if and only if statement for the linearization. This is a famous theorem in dynamics. It belongs to Bruno and Jokos. So Bruno proved the sufficiency of the condition, and Jokos proved the necessity. So let me formulate the criterion for the function being linearizable in this case. So to do this, let me first define a sequence of irrationals, starting with theta naught, which is equal to theta, and then theta I would be the fractional part of 1 over theta I minus 1. So what this does, if we expand this number into an infinite continued fraction with positive terms, then this number is, evidently a continued fraction starting with AI. So we just shift the continued fraction to the left to get the next number in this sequence. Okay, so consider the following sum. An infinite series, phi of theta, which is the sum of the following terms, say theta naught, theta 1, so on, theta n minus 1, log 1 over theta n. I'll give some intuition, both algebraic and geometric, for what this function stands for, but for the first let me formulate the theorem, and the theorem says that this is finite if and only if phi exists. Okay? Now, what is the meaning of this sum? Well, one way to understand this, it's not a very difficult exercise to show that this is finite if and only if the following sum is finite. Log qn plus 1 over qn, where pn over qn is the nth continued fraction convergent. Okay, so this is a continued fraction which starts with a naught and ends with a n minus 1. Is finite. Okay, here is another way. So, it tells you, for example, that for it's immediately clear that for definite n this is finite, and in fact you can allow some sort of sub-exponential growth. So for definite n you have a polynomial growth of the qn's, and for in terms of qn minus 1's, and you can allow some sort of sub-exponential growth, and would still be finite. Okay, so there is a very interesting geometric meaning for this expression. So let me tell you what it is. Suppose the sum is finite, okay, and for our and therefore for our quadratic polynomial there is a conformal change of coordinates in the neighborhood of the origin, which turns it into the rational rotation by angle theta. Look, so it exists, this change of coordinates only exists locally in some neighborhood of the origin. Look at the largest neighborhood of the origin where such a change of coordinates exists. It turns out to be simply connected. It's a topological disk, which I'll denote delta theta. It's usually called the Siegel disk. That's not so important. So this is the maximal domain of linearization. So this is zero. The dynamics that I have here is the dynamics of my polynomial p theta. And so inside of this domain, I have an irrational rotation up to a conformal change of coordinates. So all my orbits lie on analytic circles, which foliate this neighborhood. Now, look at the following measure of the size of this neighborhood. So take, let me get another color. Take the conformal map, call it H, of this neighborhood onto a round disk, normalized, H of 0 is equal to 0, and H prime of 0 is 1. Okay, then on the right-hand side, so if you require that on the right you have a round disk, such a map is unique. It's called the Riemann map. And on the right-hand side, you will have a disk of some radius. Let's call this radius something. I'll call this radius r of theta. It's a measure of the size of delta theta. So r of theta, by definition, is the conformal radius of delta theta. So it's some measure of how big this thing is. Okay? Now, so here's another theorem. Fairly recent, by Buf and Sherita, which says the following: the sum of phi of theta and the log radius is continuous. In the following sense, this is only defined on a dense set of points of full measure. This is defined on the same dense set of points of full measure. Their sum extends to one periodic continuous function on the real line. Okay? So after a continuous error, you should think of that thing as minus the log of the conformal radius. Okay? So that's the geometric meaning of this function. Now, so at this point, it's fair to ask what all of this has to do with computing anything. And in fact, it's important to be able to compute, both in practical and in theoretical terms, to be able to compute the value of the conformal radius. So let me just put this out there. So these are our joint results with Mark Braverman. We're interested in computability of objects known as Julia sets of quadratic polynomials. And let me just put this out there without explaining what it means. Computability of R of theta is equivalent to computability, so just this one number, of computability of the Julia set J of P of theta, whatever that means. Okay, so when can this number actually be computed? Well, let me point out that it's an open question whether the sum itself is a computable function. We know how to compute that sum on a dense set of points. Okay? We in fact know how to compute this on rationals, for which neither one of these two terms is defined. There is a conjecture by Marmi, Musa, and Yokos that that function is in fact Hölder with exponent 1/2. And if that were true, we would be able to compute it with an arbitrary precision everywhere. But that's unknown. In fact, no computable bound on its modulus of continuity is known. So in principle, the question of computing phi and computing r, in principle, they are independent, but in practice, of course, they one approaches them with the same method. So anyhow, so let me tell you a theorem. So here's a theorem. Which is part of our joint work with Mark. So theorem is, there exists polytime computable phi computable theta, I'm sorry. So polynomial time computable irrationals, okay? Such that, so not just computable numbers, but they're computable effectively, such efficiently, such that two things happen. First of all, the sum is finite. So phi of theta, which is given by this infinite series, is finite. Oh, and by the way, I should say that, but there exists, you should really read, we can present. If we can construct them. So first of all, this is finite. And second of all, this is not a computable number. which seems rather amusing. You know, usually to produce examples of non-computability, one resorts to some sort of a diagonalization argument and so on. Here is, well, an explicit, the meaning of the word explicit could be argued. Here's an explicit function, an explicit expression. We can explicitly produce polytime computable values of theta, so I can give you an algorithm, not a simple one, but of polynomial complexity, which produces them. And the sum is finite, and yet there is no algorithm which would evaluate this up to some given finite precision. So, I don't know, does this ring any bells? Anyone in the audience? It's not, per se, it's not such an interesting question in dynamics. In dynamics, the interesting question is the computability of the conformal radius and the computability of the Julia set. But there, the exact same thing happens. We can produce computable values of theta for which R of theta, and therefore the Julia set, is not computable. And in fact, that it turns out that this funny construction is the only way to produce such examples in dynamics. There is no other obstacle, no other obstruction. But here is a sort of a naturally occurring Diophantine type condition, which gives you this non-computable sum. Okay, and since I'm talking about non-computability, let me try to show you a picture, computer-generated picture. I think I'm supposed to ask for a document camera and begin presentation. Let's see if this works. Probably needs a second to warm up, if it's ever going to work. Uh-huh. So, well, let's see, this works. 100 hours. Okay. So, on this graph, you see, on the graph below, you see the conjecturally Hilder 1/2, conjecturally computable sum of the log of the conformal radius and phi. So since we conjecture that that is a computable function, it actually makes sense to try to plot the values at a whole bunch of points and then connect them with the graph. So on top is a picture of trying to visualize the non-computable function, capital phi. So what's done here is you take what should be the conformal radius, the exponential of minus capital phi, but that is not a computable function, but what's plotted here are the values which lie below the graph. Turns out that that is a computable set that you can visualize. So that's this function. You can see that it, well, you can't quite see it, but it fluctuates extremely wildly in a neighborhood of any point where any neighborhood of any point where this function is not equal to zero, you in fact get all intermediate values between zero and this number. So no matter how small a neighborhood, so there is an enormous fluctuation in the values of this function. And perhaps I should give a general reference just in case anybody is interested in this and wants to read further. So by way of shameless self-promotion, let me tell you where to find this. Okay? So, and with this, I thank you. And that's it. That's all I wanted to tell you.